did nothing till you played the
The legendary composer, arranger, band leader, and music educator and mentor to many jazz greats, Mary Lou Williams at the piano with Cynthia Tyson singing The Blues. It's from the Best of Mary Lou Williams album released in 1980. Mary Lou Williams taught herself to play the piano at age 6. And by age 13, was performing as a professional with Duke Ellington's band. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And we are going to open up our forum today a bit early, a day early, because today is Super Thursday. Tomorrow will be Free Your Mind Friday. But I thought on the cusp of March 1st, Super Tuesday, with the runoffs in 12 states that we've been talking about, that we should take a look at what this election means so far to you and how it is shaping your political attitudes and informing actions, whatever actions you deem you will be taking. So we'll be doing a lot of talking today at 888-874-4888. While I wait for your call, so let's just take an update here. We have I think tonight on CNN there's going to be a so-called debate. We know about these debates. I don't pay attention to them anymore. We figured out early what that's all about. But based on what we've talked so far about, what are your thoughts? I've gotten an incredible amount of reaction to people who said to me, one person said, look, I'm 77 years old. I've never heard this stuff before. A person from Canada wrote me just yesterday and said, you know, this is what we need. We need to have this kind of frank assessment, a frank discussion about the things that are happening. Are we not getting this anywhere? This is why we exist. This is the importance of radio to facilitate discussion, to bring entirely different points of view to your attention, hopefully to amplify your viewpoint, and in so doing, inform your actions. So I'm happy. I'm going to be talking a bit more. In fact, the next chapter I want to talk about, the last chapter I talked about the seismic demographic shift occurring. We talked about the commonalities and the ironies in that commonality between the presidential runs of Jesse Jackson and Bernie Sanders. And I want to talk next, because this is something that is totally disregarded, that shift occurring, the whole issue of white supremacy redefined before our very eyes, except nobody's talking about it, even in the candidates running, how they have had to retool and reshape their so-called message, their identities, in keeping with the expectation that they understand what their job is. First and foremost is to pledge allegiance to white supremacy in the United States, even at the point of deracinating themselves, even at the point of misrepresenting the realities that we all know exist. and convincing people, especially those who are oppressed, that it is in their interest to, you know, jump on the bandwagon, so to speak, whether the blatant bandwagon that the Republicans have, or the more subtle approach of the Democrats, the people who are now saying, hey, we are your best friends. Just come aboard, just give us that vote and make it look legitimate, that we've won this election legitimately. But really, if the theme of the next talk I give will be, if you really analyze what's happening here, you would see even among the candidates themselves, there is this redefinition of whiteness, what it means to be white. And part of the overwhelming appeal of a Donald Trump is that in the field of candidates left, okay, he's the whitest of them all. He unfortunately does not have the same white Anglo-Saxon Protestant profile of a Jeb Bush, but hey, Jeb Bush is no longer in the race. And Jeb Bush was a man alone in that regard. When you look at the field of candidates, just about everybody else has, quote, immigrant backgrounds, except they have been allowed to elevate themselves and allowed membership in the circles of whiteness in America. And so when you hear people like, you know, the subtle discussion, and I chuckle at it because the attempt is being made to convince us that the differences between, say, a Donald Trump and a Ted Cruz and a Marco Rubio are purely ideological. No. It goes much deeper than that. How dare somebody named Cruz present himself as a white person in America? How dare a Marco Rubio present himself as a white person in America? And you will see how they have cleansed themselves of the stain of being Latin. They've cleaned up. They've cleaned up. So they're talking more, they're more conservative than the conservatives. They're more flag-waving than the most ardent of flag-wavers. But interestingly, they are seen as Americans. They don't play that Hispanic-American nonsense except when they need to go to the community to, you know, to squeeze out a vote or two. But for all intents and purposes, it is understood they are the right kind of Hispanics because they are white Hispanics. Very interesting dynamic going on there. And on the flip side, on the Democratic side, we have two people, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, both of whom, just a minute ago, in historical time, could never, ever, ever have pretended to go for public office at this level, ever. Hillary Clinton came from a basic, you know, white, middle-class, working-class background. Bill Clinton, as you know, comes from a really low-class, working-class and working-poor background. These folks were not at all members of circles of whiteness in this country. And so it is interesting when we consider this demographic shift, even among the candidates themselves, this is playing out to be a very curious and a very, very exciting thing to witness and analyze, how they are couching, how they have transformed themselves into the acceptable profiles of whiteness in America, so as to keep the notions of white supremacy, the precepts, the mandate, if you will, alive, and how they're playing that game, white racism, how they play the white racism game, racism among whites and within the white world. Very, very fascinating. So I'll be talking about that next. But in the meantime, it's about your calls today. How are you assessing this election so far? What has unfolded that has drawn particular relevance for you? Why are you taking note of whatever it is that you're going to be talking to us about? What should we learn from it? And more importantly, we go back to that question that I raised. Is this not an opportune moment to really press the point with Bernie Sanders in particular, so that while he runs for the presidency, if he is in fact something of a progressive, should there not be a parallel movement or series of movements, there already are, but a coalition of movements, and a revving up of activism in the formulation of a consolidated opposition to whatever it is passing for governance and government in the United States? My theory is that this is where Jesse Jackson failed spectacularly and deliberately by refusing to energize and to keep going and to initiate the Rainbow Coalition, not just as a one-off concept, but as a permanent structure that could have been built upon in those 30 years to sustain independent candidacies all over the country and at all different levels. But he didn't do that. And my fear, as I said yesterday, is that we headed in that direction with Bernie Sanders as well, that in the end, all of this investment in Bernie Sanders and his ideological message, all of that activism will essentially be devolved back to the Democratic Party and in support of the most atrocious candidate, I think, out there, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Let's go to the other David, as he calls himself, from Brooklyn. Hello, David. You're on the air.
How are you, Chris?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I find you very fascinating and brilliant listening to you. Anyway, I'll get back to what I was going to say about Bernie Sanders. I said a long time ago, as soon as he said that he's not going to say anything about Hillary's email, he's going to drop that whole subject, he's not in it to win it, and he proved that by not making a big stink about not getting enough delegates in New Hampshire. How do you not say anything about that?
Well, you answered the question. What do you think is the answer?
He's not in it to win it.
He's not in it to win it. What is he in it to do?
It's a show. It'll give you somebody who has some other ideas as a... It's hard to explain because it's going to be Hillary against Trump. And as Joe Salente put it, it's going to be Hitler versus Hillary. So what kind of a choice is that? You know the system's rigged.
You give Bernie Sanders no credit at all for being sincere about this business of being a democratic socialist and the planks that he has been talking about in his party, in his campaign platform?
No, because it's disingenuous. He knows himself that Medicare for all is never going to happen here.
So based on this feeling of yours, what are you inclined to do? What do you think ought to happen, and what are you inclined to do?
Well, first I'll tell you what I'm inclined to do, which I mentioned a while ago. I'm not voting. I've had enough of this, I guess you call it charades, because that's what it is. Trump, that guy, people are loving him. You played that clip from him yesterday. It sounded like Nazi Germany in English. He had the whole crowd all fired up over a lot of the things that were nothing, and BS. Hypocrisy. I really don't know what to do about it besides not voting.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks for getting the conversation started today. To Dallas, Texas, Sarah, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings to you, Yatrice, and greetings to the PRN listeners.
Thank you.
Yes, Yatrice, I have to concur with the other David and what he said, because I've already told you that I'm not voting. I have no plans on voting. And this civics lesson that you have been running this entire election cycle, it has been most informative, and I've been forwarding your information and passed. By the way, Yatrice, I've given your email to Carl Nelson. I hope you don't mind, and tell him to get you on so that you can break it down and give people a lesson on what you've been running on your program. So I hope you don't mind me passing on your information to him to contact you.
Not at all.
Okay, because this situation as you laid out yesterday with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and which Glenn Ford, who's already on this station, he has been saying the entire time, Bernie Sanders is trying to play the role of a sheepdog. And we know what sheepdogs, all sheepdogs do, it keeps the herd in line so that you don't stray away from the flock. And what Bernie is doing, because as you said, if Bernie was a socialist Democrat, if that's how he ran on that platform to get into office as a congressperson and as a senator, and all of a sudden he wants to go national and run for president, and he wants to drop the socialist part and just run under Democrats and run under the Democratic umbrella, it already told us that the fix was in. He's putting up no fight. He's not attacking Hillary Clinton. This woman has so much dirt on her that he could use to go after her and tear her down, but he's not doing it. This stuff that she did with the Benghazi situation, the situation in Haiti, her past record when she was there as the first lady, as a senator, he has all this ammunition, but he's not using it. So it tells us that he's all in cahoots, and all this is, like you said, this man is in his 70s. This is his last big hurrah. He ain't going for no more public office. So why don't you go for broke if indeed you want to be in this office? Why don't you just let it rip, let it all out? Put this woman, drag her across the coals, because Hillary is not going to miss a beat to drag you across the coals if she sees that she's coming from behind and she's losing. Forget that she's a woman, because she's not acting as a woman. You can't keep playing these roles, and because she might wear panties or you wear boxers, that you got to be gentle on her. No, she's not. Gender has nothing to do with this. This is strictly a blood sport. As you said, politics is warfare without firing the weapon, without you actually going out there and killing somebody. But you're bloodying up your opponent literally and sometimes even figuratively. And we've got to stop pussyfooting around this issue with Hillary Clinton. This woman is dangerous. She has no business in public office. I wish that she would go somewhere, preferably Guantanamo, to be waterboarded. But I don't want to see her in the White House.
But guess what? Here's the thing. I mean, in a sense, we're coming from a point of idealism. I mean, we have our ideas as to how a political campaign ought to be conducted, but you have to say Hillary Clinton is getting, in fact, the results of hard-earned chicanery, if you will. Mm-hmm. She knows how to get it done. She missed out on it against Obama. She is not about to take another defeat, and she is winning by every means necessary. So why would you expect principle to be, in the same sentence with politics?
I don't, which is what I think with Bernie Sanders. If he said he's a grassroots man and he know all of this, this is what his advisors should have been telling him. People like the Cornel West, as well as the other guy who was the NAACP president, I can't even think of his name.
Ben Jealous.
Yeah, Benjamin Jealous, that are running around here. They've got to say, you know what, you got to take off the gloves on this woman. You've already won New Hampshire. You have won Iowa, and you're still behind. You've got to go for broke with her. Because she's running under Clinton's name. She's still letting people under this, black people under this nostalgic of of this myth that's been put around the Clintons about they've done so much for black people, that's under their presidency that black people have gained so much. You've got to lay the records out there, even though you signed off on some of the things with Bill Clinton while you was in the Congress, but you have got to lay it out and show the record of this woman to show that she's a fraud and black people are worse off. That we got kicked around under the Democratic administration more so than we did on the Republican. They are bad, but the Democrats are even worse, because these are the ones that always said these are the friends of the Negro. We like Negroes more so than the Republicans do, and they treat us the worst.
So are you in the camp of the other David? You're not voting either?
No. I've already told you, I'm done. I'm like Patricia. I am done. I'm not even watching this. I haven't watched any of the debate. I haven't watched anything. People have been feeding me information, but I've not watched, because I'm not going to be involved in that circus. I'm going to check the local level to see what referendums and what things are going on here. But I'm done. The only thing I would vote is if we got a campaign to get all of these people out of office, especially my representative there, Edie Bernice Johnson. She needs to be gone too. Sheila Jackson Lee up in Houston, they need to be gone. All these members in the CBC, we need to get them all out. They serve no doggone purpose. Time for window dressing for us is over with. We don't need no empty symbols of black people who are impotent and they can't do us nothing. We need to get rid of them.
All right. Well, thank you, Sarah, for adding to the conversation today.
You're welcome.
We return to New York. Ali, you're on the air.
Hi, my professor. How are you doing?
Hello, Ali. How are you? It's actually the other way around. You always give very good instruction when you're on the air. So what have you to say today?
No, I do have to say, I have to agree with some of the callers. At the beginning, I was thinking about Patricia, what Patricia has said to go over there and put that vote against Hillary. But at the end of the day, my professor, I had to say, with what you said yesterday, what you had said before, it's not even worth it to even go out there and vote. And I know, I don't know if it's Henry, I believe it's Henry, he always talks about to vote local. That is a waste of time, too. Take a look at New York City right now with this rezoning. You have community boards putting a vote down against some of this rezoning. And you have the city council, the majority people of color, voting against their own people. So I think it's time for all of us, and you're right, to stay home. Because those votes that they don't count, that we don't go out there and vote, they get the message. But I do have to go back to what you were talking about. When you played that recorder from Trump, one of the things that Trump said was, and I always remember this, he wants to make Americans, and when he talks about Americans like you said, he talks about white people. He wants to make them proud again. He wants to take his country back. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about these two Latinos. I heard on the radio here that at one time they were referring to the two of them as the two Cubans. Not as the two white Americans, because they forgetting that they are Cubans. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that they look white. The people will refer to them as Cubans. And one of those Cubans, Mr. Rubio, said in one of the introductions, when he got the second place, I think it was in New Hampshire, I don't remember exactly, he said, we need to take our country back. I thought that his people came from Cuba. So right well, there, he's telling the white people, oh, I'm one of yours. But at
exactly.
The end of the day,
he's saying I'm a member of the club now. And the irony is that even within the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, they have begun to reshape the rules as well, so that it is understood that of all of the candidates, I mean, with Jeb Bush being the symbol of you know, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, the American, he was the lone American among them. For Jeb Bush leaving, it's a bunch of new white people recently classified as Americans, as white Americans. The Irish were not white. If anybody doubts me, I refer you to the book, How the Irish Became White by Noel Ignatieff. It's an extraordinary book. I refer you to White by Law by Ian Haney Lopez, an extraordinary book. So the key contenders themselves, they're not telling people this, but you can't help but notice it. The key contenders themselves have to grapple with the idea to prove their worth within the Republican Party, particularly to prove their worth as the standard definition of whiteness in America, because none of them would fit the standard definition. You see, Trump would never have qualified to run for office not too long ago.
And I just wanted to say this, you three. What is wrong with these Latinos, and what is wrong with the African American population?
Oh, Lordy, if only we knew. But that's also really, to be very honest, it's a very serious question. It is about what oppression does. It addles the brain. It makes you self-loathing and so self-disrespecting. It gives you no room to even protect your own dignity because you don't have any anymore. When people are truly oppressed, it means that the psychological warfare aimed at them has been extremely successful.
I know that you have other phone calls, but I do have to say this. And he said, I love the poor.
Yeah, the undereducated, essentially.
Yes. And you know what? That is those Latinos. That's what he was referring to. Poor.
And poor whites.
That's right. And then he just called them dumb right there. That's what he was calling them. Thank you very much, you three.
Thank you, Ali, for your call. New Jersey. Anita, are you on the air?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm a new listener, and I found you on the internet on PRN, and we love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You love our show. This is an hour show. Everybody pitches in.
Thank you. Just a few things. Your callers are saying that they don't want to vote, and I understand. It's a bad crowd out there. However, if you were a voter and you're not voting, you're voting for the system, because if you're voting in protest, it's going to go unnoticed. So don't throw it away. Vote for someone that you don't see, which is Jill Stein. Vote for her. Give that third party something to go for the next 4 years. So don't throw it away. Do that.
I appreciate your point. However, do you, in your opinion, is the Green Party really making a strong effort here to reach constituencies that are ready and available to hear the message?
I think we don't know if they're making an effort because we don't see them, because they're not allowed to be seen.
Well, that's not true. I mean, I have always said, I lived in New York all these years. I have never seen the Green Party showing up in the community. They don't, their attitudes is like they don't want to win anything. They're not hungry for a win. It's like, we're here, you should come to us, and you should support us. No, the idea is to get aggressive. If you have a message worth listening to, you get it mobilized into the communities that you want to attract. And the Green Party has been doing this over and over and over again. And, at some point, I've said it before, continued and repeated losses are also, they become an anesthetic. Nobody wants to support a definite loss time and time and time and time again. If you want to win something, let's say it may be small enough to say, okay, we're going after a city council seat, or we're going after smaller office. Do it and win. Do it to win. But if you've been around all these years and we have not yet seen a victory that is significant enough to talk about, and it has not energized this party, it has not encouraged this party to really stretch out, it means one of two things. The party probably is not interested, or it is content with being a repeat loser. It's not a good thing. It becomes, as I said, an anesthetic. I turn off because I say to myself, okay, you're the Green Party. Clearly you have an environmental thrust. Okay, fine. But you should be aware that there are people who need to hear your message. And you should be aware of how important it is to get that message into the communities that are ready and willing and available to hear you. But I don't see that.
Yeah, I do understand that. I mean, you only see it, you know, if you go on her website and notice what she's saying and her ideas and what she would do. So that is true. That is true.
That's the problem.
You're right.
They have to do something to indicate to voters that there's shared interest in what the voters are experiencing. It's not that, you know, I bake cakes, therefore you ought to be interested in my cakes. No. I would, if I opened a business and I decide, well, I bake cakes, but the community would rather have bread, you know, I wouldn't know that until I go out there and I talk to people and figure out what is it that you would, what would you prefer to buy? What can I do that could fit your needs? To assume that, okay, I bake cakes, therefore you should like cakes. No, it doesn't work that way.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. I've been telling everybody Jill Stein, so yes, that does make sense.
Your point is well taken. I agree with you that people should find entirely different ways to express their discontent outside of this duopoly. I agree with you 100% there. Thank you so much. From Florida, Chris, you're on the air.
Therese, long-time listener. When I say long-time, I mean like, I used to get in trouble in the car for talking when you were on.
Well, thank you. What are you contributing today to this discussion?
In regards to the elections, I don't see whether it's Trump, Clinton, Sanders, Cruz, whoever. I don't see that there would be a big difference in the way the country is governed. So I think a lot of the attention that we tend to pay towards these elections is all for nothing, because I don't see a huge difference between the Obama administration, for instance, and the Bush administration. I see a lot of continuity, especially when it comes to foreign policy.
Okay.
So,
and what does this do? How does this shape your political attitude?
I'm in agreement that a new movement needs to be started. However, people, the average citizens like myself and some of the callers, we're very good at analyzing and pointing out what isn't working. Mm-hmm. What I fail to see is movement. Maybe, you know, some people actually are active and they do what they're supposed to do. But so many of us tend to just pay attention to a candidate because because we don't like the opposition. So we get all in a tizzy, as you would say, over a Trump presidency or Rubio, Bush, Sanders, Clinton, etc. But we really should just leave both of them alone, start our own. But I find it difficult because when you try to talk to people and explain this to them, even around the issues that they care about, they can't be bothered.
Well, that is par for the course. But let's talk specifically about you. And you made a certain observation, and I agree, that it is hard to distinguish between the Republicans and Democrats with respect to all kinds of policies, domestic and foreign.
Mm-hmm.
With this information, how, therefore, have you changed your attitude and your actions on a daily basis? What is happening in your life right now that is different from when you didn't see these, the continuity. When you saw the continuity, you acted one way. Now that you have seen the continuity, what are you doing? How are you responding?
One, I feel on my level, you know, I feel the best thing I could do is to inform the people in my circle, try to point out the certain things, because you tend to hear a lot of the same complaints, working so hard and not getting enough, or, you know, I got sick and it set me back, you know, financially. So I try to inform people why a lot of the same things happen to people regardless of location, race, age, so on and so forth. I try to point out it is a larger system and that the only way we can really change it is to move away from the system.
Okay, so, you're moving away from it, but toward what?
I would say probably smaller, try to establish smaller, maybe smaller self-governing systems as opposed to just looking for answers or opportunities from people who don't want to give us opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us an example of how that works out in practical terms for you? Let's say on a given day, give us an example of a thing that you do today that you didn't do before because of this consciousness.
Well, on a day-to-day basis, it depends on, I'm a little more conscious of where I spend my dollars. I try to, you know, even though Florida is like the king of Walmart, you know, there's Walmart like on every block down here, you know. But, you know, so I try to stay away from the Walmarts, the Targets, the CVSs, the Walgreens, because they all seem to be in cahoots, even though they want to give us the appearance that they're competing. Things of that nature. I keep the internet. I don't keep a cable box. I mean, obviously, these are just small things, but I think if you multiply them over a certain number of people, a change will start. I can't say, like, oh, well, on this day, I started doing X, Y, and Z different. I mean, it's just little things that I can do. But also keep in mind, Utrice, I've been listening to your voice since I was probably, oh, God, I was a little kid. Gosh.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. You know, but I'm only 22, so that's impossible.
That is so funny. My parents are of West Indian descent, Panamanian and Jamaican. So, you know, we always used to get threatened, my brother and I, in the car because it's, you know, big mind, you tree sign, shut up.
Well, Chris, thank you. And I thank you also for giving us insights. What you described as little things is actually a very big thing. Just that change that you have made comes out of a consciousness about how you can spend or choose to spend your money, where you put your money. That's a huge decision. If we were to multiply you and your actions by a couple of million people, this system could...
We may see some progress.
Yes, absolutely. But thank you so much for calling and adding to the conversation today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Utrice. Have a good one.
You too. Well, would you believe there's another Chris from New York? You're on the air. Chris?
Uh-oh. Hello, can you hear me at all?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good afternoon, Ms. Trees, and good afternoon, procurement listeners and staff.
Thank you.
And to the last Chris, and to the last Chris that called. when you asked about these elections, and I guess what we're picking up or how is it influencing our thoughts, I would say that outside of discussing the election, I think, like the last caller said, we should be discussing, I guess, creating new systems. And I think also, like you said, they're going to have to be small initially, local, but I don't think that they should be part of the current system. And in Lawrence, where I live in New York, which is right not too far from JFK Airport, and part of Five Towns, there's a very a Jewish community pretty much, you know, within blocks, and it's a very dense population of Jews in the area. And
well, do you know how that came to be? It was because of what was known then as restrictive covenants. Many Jews who lived in the city and became middle class and moved to the suburbs could not and were not permitted to basically integrate communities. So they did what everybody else would do, which is to find places where they can be together. Lawrence was one of them. And
yeah,
that
exactly.
was as a result of being segregated, white segregation in New York City.
And they seem to be doing quite well. And they work in the stores. They work in the medical offices. And even if you work in the area and you're not Jewish, you still have to abide by their rules and close the stores at a certain time. And I would say that that's an example I think, you know, black and Latino people need to begin following, and white people included, and give themselves some financial power. Let their dollars circulate within their communities, controlled by people who care about them, as opposed to giving those dollars to, like the last caller said, a Walmart, who was just going to hide the money overseas.
Well, let me ask you, Chris. I mean, that works on the economic level. We're talking here now about the raw business of politics, and politics is about power and governance. How do you exercise or flex your political muscles? What are you doing?
In the past, I have voted. And currently, I don't vote, and I am not yet part of any particular organization. But I would as far as the system, as far as voting is concerned, any elections or any... As far as my political stance at this point, I would say that America wasn't negotiated with everyone in mind. It wasn't created with any of us in mind. And that contract needs to be deemed null and void. And I think that's the conversation we need to be having about politics. That the political system was created for a very particular group of people. And that very particular group of people are no longer the dominant or no longer the masters of the rest of us. And when we have a discussion about who we're going to vote for, we should be having more discussion about what our new system needs to look like, and that this one does not govern us anymore. And I think that's the kind of talk that we need to have with each other, as opposed to saying, well, we vote for this group or we vote for that group, maybe things will get better. Maybe we should say this entire system is not good at all, from the Supreme Court to these super delegates to these delegates to these. Redistricting, it's all a trick. And if we look at it like something to be molded or shaped or reorganized, it's just you're going to just get tired. Because they have a countermeasure for every move you're going to plan other than putting a complete stop to it. They'll drive around you, drive over you, dig under you. They're ready for it. They've calculated every move you're going to make within their system.
Well,
they haven't calculated your resolve. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much for your contribution, Chris, to the conversation. We go to New Jersey. John, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, hi. I just like to address what the other caller was saying about avoiding the Targets and the Walmarts and stuff. I've been doing that my entire life. Always support local small places. I think that's got to be the start of the movement, to make those places realize that we're not going to put up with their unfair treatment of their employees and just everything. You know, their whole businesses are run by insurance companies. If you really think about it, how, like, even when you're at a Home Depot, it's like everything is with the flags. They're closing aisles to, like, just put something back on a shelf. It's just ridiculous. And they put all those small businesses out of business so that they can just, you know, crush everything and make everything just pure profit for the people up top and the workers making peanuts.
I agree. But John, let's talk politics.
Okay.
In this political season, what's on your mind? How has this election shaped your political consciousness?
Well, I've been a fan of Bernie Sanders for many years. I've watched him on Bill Maher, and I always said this guy would be a great president. And I love how he wants to, you know, do a, almost like a revolution, but in a sense that give the country back to the people, all people, not just, you know, the top 1%. And I feel that the, you know, even the Hillary Clinton, she's, I think she might have had a little maneuvering to get that Iowa win. It's you know, I just don't feel like she's the one. And I feel like Bernie could do a tremendous job. But I think America's been so dumbed down for so long that they see Trump and they think, you're like, hey, you know, it's great. And, you know, if there was a John Stamos in his prime could have run for president on his looks. You know, I mean, that's how stupid America is. And they avoid the issues. They vote against their own issues for retarded reasons, you know.
How, what would you be inclined to think of Bernie Sanders if it turns out that Hillary Clinton captures the nomination and Bernie Sanders decides to be a loyal Democrat and turn over whatever delegates and other support that he has to her in order to ensure a Democratic administration?
Well, that's a tight, you know, it's a slippery slope. It's tough to call because I've been, you know, watching how people have been debating that back and forth. For instance, again, on Bill Maher's show, they said, if you can't have the fish, take the chicken. It's better than, what's your option then, to have Donald Trump as president? You know, I mean, he's, it just seems so not ready to be a president, or just, it's just a joke. It's like a game for him. He just wants another notch in his belt. And I think Bernie, it's going to be a tough call for what Bernie should do. I mean, what would his options be, if you think about it?
Well, I'm not discussing so much his options. I'm discussing your options. What are your options to be in that scenario?
I would love to see like a Jill Stein get, you know, be more aggressive and get her voice out there and really work very hard. I mean, Bernie's 74 years old and he's working like, I couldn't even work that hard when I was 20. And he's cranking it, right? I mean, he's out there at 5 a.m., you know, after being up all night in that, what was it, Iowa election, he was midnight, he's still giving commencement speeches, and then he's running down to wherever he ran to at New Hampshire at 5 a.m. doing another rally. I mean, this guy's tough. You know,
well,
and I'm really not sure what the answer is for Bernie to do. I guess he's going to have to support Hillary and go that way and just try to convince the other people. I mean, do you think he could possibly run as an independent and win?
Well, he answered that question already. He had no intention of running as a true independent. He's running under the banner of the Democratic Party. So we have to just take it as he presented it. Thanks a lot, John, for your call today.
I just want to say one other thing. I liked what you said about like the Green Party, how they have to be more, they're content with just losing. They really have to be more aggressive. Because I used to always vote for them. And then I would look at, like, the votes, and I would see they got, like, you know, 400 votes or something. Like, you know, not even close. And it is, like, considered, like, a wasted vote. And they have to be much more aggressive, much more get their word out. And they're going to have to really, unfortunately, they are going to have to solicit the like-minded, wealthy people who want to contribute to them and bankroll them and get them so they can get out there and show options. You know, do you agree with that?
Well, we'll see if they're taking the hint. These many years, they've had the opportunity to take the hint that they've got some serious work to do. We'll see if it sinks in this year. Thanks a lot, John, for your call. Sean from New York, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Hello,
Hi,
Sean.
Teresa. How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
I know I haven't called in a while, but I've been listening to, you know, every now and then I've been catching your show with regard to politics, and I've been on and off, you know, following the political landscape. But the one thing I notice is I know on the left we tend to, you know, critique everything. You know, if there's something out of line with a certain candidate, we critique it, and he's not perfect. So my question to you is there a perfect candidate? because, in all my years of looking at politics, there just doesn't seem to be one. In other words, you may want X amount of issues addressed, or a certain candidate address X amount of issues. And it seems like no matter who the candidate is, they can't address all of them. They fall short on some, in terms of a list of things that need to be addressed. So sometimes if certain things are not addressed, people get turned off. So my question to you is there a perfect candidate? You know, because, again, I know on the left sometimes we tend to over-critique, you know, everything about certain candidates. You know, oh, Bernie's not this, Bernie's not that, blah, 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 blah. So my question to you is there one, and do you think there will ever be one? Because I don't think there is a perfect one. And
of course,
I just think
there's
no
perfect candidate. There's no perfect human being. The,
right.
The issue that I'm saying is be true to what you say you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. If you say you're a democratic socialist, then I need to understand what that is. And how does it differ from the ideology, the standing ideology and philosophy of the Democratic Party? What makes you different from the Democratic Party?
Right.
But
if
you're saying that, you know, I'm really a democratic socialist, and then you are going along with the Democratic Party program, I have trouble.
Right.
So that's all. I mean, the idea is be true to what you said. And this is what we experienced with Jesse Jackson. And this is why I started, I made it a point to make that parallel.
Mm-hmm.
This groundswell of support put behind Jesse Jackson based on what he represented himself to be. And it was a very noble cause. And in fact, he did make significant inroads. I am under no illusion about whether Jesse Jackson is a perfect person. Believe me.
And when I mean perfect, I don't mean even so much as a person. I'm just talking about as a politician in general. You know,
I'm talking about it as a politician. And that is why compare most of the politicians that I know who say that they are against the system to Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Here's a guy who was a Democrat. But he was a pain in the neck to the Democratic Party. Fannie Lou Hamer
was what you call a diamond in the rough. You won't see a politician probably like that for a very, very long time.
But the point I'm making is that there are templates that have been established. And those templates also established a mode of conduct. It established a kind of discipline as how you relate when you say you are representing the people, what your conduct ought to be. And it ought to reflect that at all times. And no compromise. And this is why it's not that this is, you know, some kind of a mythical creature we're looking for. Mm-hmm. We've had great leaders. And Adam Clayton Powell was one. Fannie Lou Hamer, who had never really run for public office. Look what she did.
Right.
With Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. So you have instances, ready reference points for how people can behave and what they can achieve with, you know, a groundswell of support. But then when you say, well, you're about, you know, you're not an insider. And everything is suggesting, well, you know, we got to look at you cross-eyed because you can't be trusted. We have to be on your back.
Right. Well, look, I look at politics and politicians. I always look at them with a critical eye. In other words, look, I have friends on Facebook now, and I like Bernie Sanders. You know, I will probably vote for him, but I know he falls short on a lot of things, but. But I look at people on Facebook, for instance, and they're every 5 minutes they're pumping out something for Bernie, blah, 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 blah. And I'm trying to tell these people, calm down. I said, you know, I know you like the guy, but he's a politician. Remember, politicians are politicians. Politicians do what politicians do. They can be bought. They can be sold. So don't get so wrapped up in the personality of the politician to the point where, you know, it's godlike, you know, and then all of a sudden.
But what they're trying to say to you, though, they're trying to say to you, Sean, is that Bernie Sanders is a major contrast to Hillary Clinton.
Oh, no. And I know exactly that's what they're saying, but I also have friends on Facebook. Every 5 minutes, they're posting something about President Obama, you know, every 5 minutes. And, you know, and I'm like, listen, my thing is, don't let it be cult-like. Politicians are supposed to work for us. It's not the other way around. I said, so once you start getting into a quote-unquote cult-like undying allegiance given to these politicians, this is when things start to go awry, because now there's no critique of the politician anymore. Remember, you're in love with this guy. So now if he does anything wrong or anything you don't like, I'll give him a pass. Oh, he bombed Libya, I'll give him a pass. Oh, he invaded Panama, I'll give him a pass. You see where I'm going?
Yeah, but you know what? I think that there is sufficient room here to give people the benefit of the doubt. But I think they have some clue by now as to what the differences are between and among the candidates. Thanks so much, Sean, for your call today. And that brings us to the end of the program. Thank you so much for your insightful comments and analyses. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. I love the title of that show. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program. And, of course, you know tomorrow it's Free Your Mind Friday. It's a free-for-all. You raise whatever subjects you want to raise. Today we were more disciplined and we were focusing on the elections. Tomorrow we talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.